It's Sam Cedar launching an illegal invasion and occupation of your brain.
This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook of your choice. Go to audiblepodcast.com/majority report. That's audiblepodcast.com/majority report for a free audiobook.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, August 15th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, author Chris Hedges from Truth Out, from Truth Dig, and author of Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt. Also on the program today, late breaking, a judge in Pennsylvania refuses to issue a temporary injunction against the Pennsylvania voter ID law that will be appealed. More on that. Joe Biden comes out, vows no cuts to Social Security. What's its value? Not sure. We'll see. Big story out of, couple of big stories out of Boston. TSA says that, you know how we're supposed to be looking for terrorists. We're also racial profiling. And then, perhaps not a coincidence, Tufts University out of Boston also finds that whites think that they are more apt to be racially discriminated against. Yeah. We'll get to that story about the nuclear reactor shutdown. Credit card robo-signing. Oh, what a day, folks. What a wonderful, wonderful day. This story is, I don't know if it's discouraging or encouraging. Last week, Missouri voters, this is according to Science Insider, passed a referendum, an amendment, to their constitution. I don't know if it's a constitution or just a statute. However, it is the right to pray. It was Amendment 2. And it essentially basically just says that all residents have a natural and indefeasible right to worship Almighty God according to the dictates of their own consciences. One of the aspects of this amendment, it also says that no student shall be compelled to perform or participate in academic assignments or educational presentations that violate his or her religious beliefs. So it's nice they have the right to pray. Why shouldn't people have the right to pray? In fact, it's already in our Constitution, at least been divined by the Supreme Court, that people have a right to pray. Of course they do. However, according to Josh Resnow of the National Center for the Science Education in Oakland, California, which tracks these efforts, the words essentially give students the legal right to skip assignments related to evolution if the subject matter conflicts with their beliefs. That extension exemption could extend throughout their scholastic career, he adds, since evolution is not just taught in one lesson but remains a recurrent theme throughout science education. The amendment also leaves a hole in their coursework as it provides no guidance on any substitute lessons. So there you have it, folks. Kids in Missouri, you know what? I don't like evolution. It's icky. I'm going to skip science class today and for the rest of the year and until I graduate. However, to be fair, Mike Hoey, a supporter of the amendment and executive director of the Missouri Catholic Conference, thinks that Rusno is overanalyzing the language in the amendment. Sort of like a scientist. I don't think this will affect science in the classroom in any significant way, he says. I think the vast majority of students will want to participate in all units of their science classes. Which I think probably completely contradicts the notion that overanalyzing the language would bring you to the conclusion that students have the right not to participate. Right? Because now he thinks, well, I think students will want to participate. The amendment makes no mention of providing an alternative curriculum, Hoey adds. So any student who opts out of biology lesson, he says, quote, will need to face the consequences of missing those lessons. As if we all won't deal with the consequences of those students. I'm not going to listen to evolution or science. I'm just going to grow up to be a citizen of this country and then continue on to push the idea that evolution is just a bunch of hooey. I mean, soon they'll be opting out of things about climate change. I don't know. I guess there's a whole raft of things, right? So congratulations, Missouri. You race to the bottom, you are winning. We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Chris Hedges. This episode of The Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. You can get a free Audible downloadable book right now, a free one. Go to audiblepodcast.com/majority report. Why not pick up Chris Hedges' Death of the Liberal Class? We were supposed to have him on the show today. Fell through. Maybe we'll have them on tomorrow, but pick up a free Audible downloadable book at audiblepodcast.com/majority report. You can pick up Chris Hedges' Death of the Liberal Class right now, and you can get it for free. Slipping away. All right, folks, looks like we're having some problems getting hold of Chris Hedges. All apologies. We should have probably played this. But indeed, we will continue on. Big story today out of Pennsylvania. Commonwealth Court Judge Robert Simpson said he would not grant an injunction that would have halted the law requiring each voter to show a valid photo ID in Pennsylvania. We have spoken about this before. There are upwards to around 750,000 people, registered voters, who do not have the required ID. There is no system in place yet to provide a voter ID. In other words, people who don't want to drive, can't drive, and go get one of these special IDs. It appears that even the people at the DMV who would issue such a license aren't even aware of it. In fact, during this court case to enjoin the implementation of this law, testimony was presented about workers at the Department of Transportation license centers who appeared completely uninformed about the requirement to issue free non-drivers' IDs. Simpson, the judge, did not rule on the full merits of the case, only whether to grant a preliminary injunction stopping it from taking effect. So this will be appealed by those people who are fighting this, including the American Civil Liberties Union. It will go to the Supreme Court. However, votes of 4 of 6 Supreme Court justices would be needed to overturn the ruling. The judge, of course, is a Republican. Relevant only because we know the Republican leader of the state Senate spoke of the voter ID law as going to provide Mitt Romney a win in Pennsylvania. However, the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania is split 3-3, 3 Democrats, 3 Republicans. There's only 6 members of justices that are sitting because one justice is has been suspended, a Republican fighting criminal corruption charges. Well, isn't that nice? The original rationale in the Pennsylvania Republican-controlled legislature for the law to prevent election fraud played little role in the case before Simpson because the state's lawyers acknowledge there is no evidence of any of these things ever taking place, nor do they expect it to take place during this election. Instead, they insisted, and this is the ruling basically, was whether or not lawmakers properly exercised their latitude to make election-related laws when they chose to require voters to show this ID. In other words, the the judge was simply ruling on whether or not this was in the purview of the state legislature to make such a law, not whether or not it is a valid law. The Department of Justice is already on the case. On Monday, it asked the state's top election official for a long list of information about the law to see if it is an infringement on people's rights according to the Voting Rights Act. Pennsylvania is not one of those states that needs to check with the Justice Department before it changes its laws. It's unclear whether or not the Department of Justice can actually stop this law or whether or not they feel that there is reason to do so. Some people have argued, well, this is going to disenfranchise a lot of old people outside of who might otherwise vote for Republicans. But the fact of the matter is that nearly 45% of eligible voters in Philadelphia may be disenfranchised by this. Of course, this is the way that Democrats generally win in Pennsylvania, is by winning by such an overwhelming amount in Philadelphia in particular, but other urban centers as opposed to the more rural areas. So this will be interesting to see what happens. Interesting to see what happens if it's possible that Republicans could now win Pennsylvania with such an enormous amount of people. 30-some-odd percent of people disenfranchised, registered voters. Meanwhile, in Ohio, Republican plans to suppress the vote. And not just suppress the vote, but disenfranchise voters. Marches on. New York Times picks this up. Rachel Maddow has been on this story for at least a week or two. But if you live in Butler or Warren counties, in these suburbs of Cincinnati, you can vote for president starting in October with an absentee ballot. You can go to a polling place to get that absentee ballot after work, in the early evening to the mid-evening. I mean, it's late evening for those of us with children and no lives, or on weekends. Because Republican officials in those counties who control the Board of Elections voted to make it convenient for their residents to vote early and avoid long lines for voting on Election Day. But if you live in Cincinnati, Republicans on the county election board plan to end early voting in the city at 5 p.m. And they will ban it completely on the weekends. This is according to the Cincinnati Inquirer. Hamilton County, which contains Cincinnati, is a largely Democratic county, votes solidly for Barack Obama in 2008. Butler or Warren County lean Republican. My, my, what a tremendous coincidence.
Surprise, surprise.
In counties likely to vote for President Obama, Republicans have voted against the extended hours. And Ohio Secretary of State John Husted has broken the tie in their favor. In counties likely to vote for Mitt Romney, Republicans have not objected to the extended hours. Cincinnati is 45% black, Cleveland 53% black. Butler County, however, 8% black. Warren County, 3.5% black. Wow, what a shock. How completely and utterly consistent with everything we know about Republicans.
Surprise, surprise.
Meanwhile, in Florida, more than half of black voters went to the polls early in 2008, largely to support President Obama. So last year, in Florida, Republican lawmakers severely curtailed the early voting period. And now we also know in Pennsylvania, this voter ID law may stand. We also know from depositions in a lawsuit in Florida that the former chairman of the Republican Party in Florida says that, yeah, this was par for the course. People would specifically say, we're going to do things to disenfranchise black voters. And the strongest voice coming out against these tactics by Republicans? Well, of course, it's George R. R. Martin, the author of the Game of Thrones series. On his blog, he writes, Republicans and their teabagger allies have scant regard for our republic or its values. They are oligarchs and racists clad in the skin of dead elephants. Yeah, that's why the guy is a best-selling author. And I want to remind you of what Harold Meyerson wrote last week. I guess it was in late July. Suppose Mitt Romney ekes out a victory in November by a margin smaller than the number of young and minority voters who couldn't cast ballots because of the photo ID laws enacted by Republican governors and legislators. He said that Democrats, in fact, the country, should ignore the results. Mass demonstrations would be in order. So would a congressional refusal to confirm any of Romney's appointments. A president premised on racist restriction of the franchise creates a political and constitutional crisis, and responding to it with resigned acceptance or inaction would negate America's hard-won commitment to democracy and equality. I think he's got a good point. Meanwhile, let's get to this story from the other day. I just found this just so stunning. It's a fairly innocuous story. A reactor at the Millstone nuclear plant in Waterford, Connecticut. And I remember that nuclear plant well, actually. I went to college right around there. And the cooler students who would live off campus, of which I was not one, would all rent like these nice houses on the water, but it would literally overlook the nuclear power plant. Because it tends to bring down the rental values, I guess. Has been shut down because of something that in the 1960s, and I should say this piece is from the New York Times, written by Matthew L. Wald, something in the that its 1960s designers never anticipated. The water in the Long Island Sound was too warm to cool it. Under the reactor safety rules, the cooling water can be no higher than 75 degrees. On Sunday afternoon, the water's temperature soared to 76.7 degrees, prompting the operator to order the shutdown of the 880-megawatt reactor. Temperatures this summer are the warmest we've had since operations began here at Millstone. Plant's first reactor, now retired, began operation in 1970. Now, this should come as little surprise. July was the hottest July on record in the United States. The water from the sound is piped into the plant to absorb heat from pumps and other pieces of equipment. As the sound's temperature inched upward this summer, Dominion Power received permission from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to measure it at three locations instead of one, and to calculate the average in the hope that it would be lower. Contemplate this for a moment. Safety regulations say if the water you're pumping in to cool off this nuclear reactor is above 75 degrees, it's dangerous because it's not going to have the cooling effects as it should. So what do they do, and what are they allowed to do by the regulatory agency? Devise another plan in which to measure the temperature of the water. So instead of the water just coming right in, we're going to measure it over there. We're going to measure it over there and here, and we'll take the average. I don't know why they didn't just go, well, wait a second. Any chance we can measure the water temperature up in Ogunquit, Maine, and the water temperature up near Greenland, and the water temperature that's coming into the reactor, and then average that one? It's a stunning, that in and of itself should have been the story. But apparently that did not help on Sunday. The sound's temperature usually does not peak until late August. So it could get even warmer. Eventually, engineers could change the Milford reactor's intake pipe so it draws water from further below the surface where temperatures are lower. They could also sharpen their pencils and try to determine whether the plant can operate safely with cooling water above 75 degrees. But neither is a short-term project because you need to get those pencils very, 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 very sharp. In other words, decrease the margin of error. The story goes on to say that power plants in the Midwest have also experienced problems as temperatures have soared in recent weeks. In some cases, reactors shut down because the cooling water was too warm. In others, the ongoing drought had shrunken the body of water from which the cooling water is drawn. The plant's intake pipes were above the surface. And that's basically the piece. But you know what's missing from this piece? We've got the who. That would be the reactor, right? And the people involved in trying. We got the when. That took place on Sunday. We got the what, that is that the temperature became too warm. The temperature of the water coming in is too warm. We got the where, it was in Connecticut, just around the corner from where I used to party as a kid. We got the how, well, the temperature in the water went too high, that's how. But what seems to be missing from this is the why. No mention of July being the hottest month in the history of this country, or at least the measurements. No mention of that thing. What's that thing that's happening that's causing stuff to get warmer? There's something. Let me see if I can think about what it is. Warming. Oh, I know what it is. It's that made-up thing by that fat guy with the airplane about global warming. It's just stunning that this guy doesn't bother to mention it in this piece. You couldn't have just said, drop pencil sharpening and just gone directly to the point and said they may recalculate what the plant can hold and also global warming. It's just stunning. And meanwhile, this guy was one of the writers on a piece back in July, Weather Extremes Leave Parts of U.S. Grid Buckling. And again, the only mention of global warming in this much bigger piece is that many federal agencies have officially expressed a commitment to plan for climate change. That's it. And people wonder why people aren't more concerned about global warming. Because somehow, just mysteriously, for the first time in 42 years of operation, this plant is finding that the water, even when they calculate it from three different locations and average it together, is suddenly too warm. So much for the why in this reporter's story. Oh, and just the other day, James Hansen, director of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies. Incidentally, Robert Goddard invented the rocket essentially in Worcester. I think he went out and fired it off in Shrewsbury, Mass. But that's just a bit of trivia. Still, I want to see if I can be named an ambassador to like a Chamber of Commerce Worcester ambassador. Also, just as the first Valentine's Day card. Yeah, invented in Worcester. Birth control pill? Yeah. Worcester.
Wow!
That's pretty good, right? If you saw the population of Worcester, you would know where the inspiration came from. Sorry, Worcester. I still love you. It's just an old joke I had. James Hansen on the current TV with Elliot Spitzer the other day said, if we continue with business as usual in this century, we will drive to extinction 20 to 50% of the species on the planet. We're pushing the system an order of magnitude faster than any natural changes of climate in the past. Hansen was predicting climate change as early as the mid-80s in papers, and it must be of little consolation to him that he was correct. I still can't get over that story. Meanwhile, yesterday I touched on this briefly. Republicans very concerned about Paul Ryan, of course, and with good reason. They're also, and it springs out of the concern they had with Mitt Romney. But 2 hours after the Paul Ryan vice presidential announcement for the Republican congressional candidates, 2 hours after the Paul Ryan announcement, the NRCC, National Republican Campaign Committee, Congressional Committee, I should say, sent out a memo to all of its candidates saying, do not say, quote, entitlement reform, privatization, or the words every option is on the table in regard to Medicare or Social Security. Do say strengthen, secure, save, preserve, and protect. We can see that Republicans are panicking. I mentioned yesterday that the thing for you to watch out for is that the Obama administration is going to make an issue of Paul Ryan as an obstruction to a grand bargain, as opposed to Paul Ryan, the killer of Medicare. And both of these narratives are in play. Saw the HuffPo story yesterday that suggested the White House or the campaign was making an issue of Paul Ryan's obstructionism of the grand bargain. And during President Obama's speech, I think it was in Ohio yesterday. Was it in Ohio? Iowa? He made a point of saying that Paul Ryan stood in the way of compromise. But on the other side of the ledger, Joe Biden at a coffee break at the Coffee Break Cafe in Stuart, Virginia, said, hey, by the way, let's talk about Social Security. Number one, I guarantee you, flat guarantee you, there will be no changes in Social Security, Biden said. I flat guarantee you. David Dayan picked up on this at Fire Dog Lake News, and he echoed exactly what I was saying yesterday. Well, I don't know that he echoed it. I'm sure he came up with it independent. But this is the beat that he's been on, and those of us who have been on this beat, this is the way that we perceive what could go down with the Ryan selection. And I read, when the addition of Paul Ryan to the Republican ticket turned the presidential race into a competing set of visions for social insurance programs, I thought it could go in two directions. Either the Obama-Biden ticket would straddle the divide and embrace a bipartisan deficit reduction plan, which pokes at the sacred cows of liberals and conservatives, meaning that the grand debate of the campaign would be between a center-right and far-right vision, leaving the entire idea that the social insurance plans ought to be protected, if not expanded, off the table. Or Obama and Biden would get forced into a corner and make promises on these programs that would conflict with their past attempts to reach a grand bargain that subjected the programs to cuts. Biden has basically done the latter here. It's the kind of no wiggle room guarantee that could be useful after the election. Dane goes on to say exactly what my thoughts were on reactions to what Biden had to say, was that it's just the vice president. It's just about Social Security. But this is exactly what we need for Medicare and exactly what we need and Medicaid and exactly what we need from the president and from every congressional Democrat that you can get your hands on. So remember, the question to your congressional candidates, if you see them at a town hall, if you see them at a, if you have some type of online thing, you could send them an email and ask them this question and phrase it this way, folks. Do you agree with Paul Ryan, or do you believe that there should be no cuts to Medicare and Social Security? And by no cuts, I mean no raises in the age of eligibility, no changes to the cost of living increases. Whose side are you on? And if you can get them on video on this, fantastic. Because after the election, that's when this is going to be irrelevant. Use this election to leverage in some way what's going to happen after the election. That's the, I don't know, that is the most, I think, sort of relevant thing about this election that I can say. We're going to take a break and head into the better half of the program. We're going to try and reschedule Chris Hedges for another time. Sorry about that, folks. And in the better half of the program, well, let's do this story here. This is pretty stunning. We'll get to that TSA story in the better half, but this story is pretty stunning. Coming out of Tufts University School of Arts and Sciences, in conjunction with the Harvard Business School. Tufts, of course, is again in Massachusetts. It's a very Massachusetts, it's a very Sam Cedar-centric day. Because I used to hang out in Powder House Square and see bands like the Blood Oranges back in the day. And Treat Her Orange. That's right, where Sandman would hook up with some of the Blood Orange people, I think it was, or some of the other people from Treat Her Right. I can't remember. Whites believe that they have replaced blacks as the primary victim of racial discrimination in contemporary America. This according to that new study out of Tufts. They asked a nationwide sample of 208 blacks and 209 whites to indicate the extent to which they felt blacks and whites were the targets of discrimination in each decade from the 1950s to the 2000s. A scale of 1 to 10 was used, with 1 being not at all and 10 being very much. White and black estimates of bias in the 1950s were similar. Respondents also generally agreed that racism against blacks has decreased over time, although whites believe it has declined faster than blacks do. Well, I mean, that's to be expected. I mean, no, honestly, on some level, that's to be expected. To be able to calibrate that as a white person, you're never going to be as sensitive to how much racism is in play as a black person does, because you're not subjected to it on a daily basis. You're not subjected to it. You're not subjected to it, period. You know, so in any situation where you have to empathize with someone, you can never really fully appreciate how that impacts their lives. You can come close. So the notion that the disparity of how much racism has decreased, that doesn't surprise me that much. However, whites believe that racism against whites has increased significantly as racism against blacks has decreased. So that means that these white people must feel they are the objects of racism, which is a wholly different phenomenon. On average, whites rated anti-white bias as more prevalent in the 2000s than anti-black bias by more than a full point on the 10-point scale. In other words, so not only do whites in this study think that they are being subjected to racism, they think they're being subjected to racism more than blacks are today. Moreover, some 11% of whites gave anti-white bias the maximum rating of 10, compared to only 2% of whites who rated anti-black bias a 10. You know what the subtitle of this study could be? Whites are the biggest bunch of whiny-ass teeny babies. This is just stunning. How completely divorced from reality do you have to be? And the irony is, of course, is that this story was performed by researchers in Boston. And in a moment, I'll talk about that TSA story coming out of Boston, where Boston TSA security personnel have been targeting blacks and Hispanics so much so that that 30 other of their fellow TSA guards or security personnel have been saying, like, there's a problem here. Just stunning. And of course, you understand that playing on this notion that whites feel that they are more a target of racism than black people. This is what is known as the Republican electoral strategy. It is why you will see these ads about welfare giveaways and Obama being angry and hateful. It is because it plays in to this notion that many whites apparently have, that they are an oppressed majority because they're white. Just, I don't know. I don't even know what the word for it is. Ridiculous? Sickening? I don't know. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. We'll head into the better half of the program. I made a big appeal yesterday for new members. Well, I think you get a sense of how that went. Really do need your support. If you can become a member, please do. Other ways to support the show, but your becoming a member makes the free part of the show possible. So if you can do so, please do. We're going to take a break. Number 646-257-3920. You can IM me at Majority FM. What do you got?
I was going to say, you know, donate your account. As usual, you know.
Donate your account. JustCoffee.coop.
Buy all your stuff through our Amazon link.
Buy all your stuff through our Amazon link.
Subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Subscribe to our YouTube channel if you're a YouTuber. Many, many ways in which you can support the show, but the best way, as the Midrash says, is to become a member. I'm not sure if the Midrash says it or if it's one part of it. Maybe it's the Mishnah. I'm not sure. All right, folks. See you in the better half of the program.